play.
Sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah.
It's alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up. The show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast, previewing the 2020 Honda Classic. We head to Florida. California is gone. Florida swing in full effect here. It's going to be a fun 144 golfer field to help me break it all down. My co-host, as always, you can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. See what's going on, man.
Doing well, dude. 200th episode tonight. Feeling good. Ready to get the Honda carnage moving.
Yes, let's get it moving. Is it really our 200th episode?
I have no idea.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I think it's got to be something more than 100. I know that much. So,
how long have we been doing this? It's been a while now.
You know, I could not be lazy. It could take me a couple minutes. I'll know here in a few minutes. But
it is your 200th episode this or 200th podcast this week. If you think about that,
yeah,
most likely in the last 7 days, this is your 200th one. That would not surprise me one bit.
That's very possible. One day I'd like to make it a profession. For now, it's just a hobby that pisses my wife off. So,
yeah.
So many fun things. This is our 122nd episode.
Is it really?
Yeah. Wow. 122. That's over 2 full calendar years. And obviously, we took some time off. So, yep. Big, big things. But you know what a big, big thing is? Puerto Rico, baby. Oh, we'll talk about WGC in a minute. But Victor Hovland takes down the crown. I already saw you had a hungover pitcher. He basically did his best Lee Westwood on Instagram today.
Yeah,
So that was, you know, it was funny. Hovland, I love his personality. The dude's funnier than hell. It took he had to win the Tony Finau Invitational to make it work, which is kind of a shame. And it sucked watching your boy, or the podcast boy, your boy, Teeter, so close. But overall, fun tournament. I think we did pretty well. But any thoughts on Vic and the others in that tournament?
Yeah, I was actually like, more interested to watch that than I was the WGC, especially when we talk about, you know, how that ended up. It became even more interesting to me to finish up with or to watch Puerto Rico. Yeah, I mean, Hovland, they came on the air and Hovland made a triple and basically backed it right up to where Teeter was. Teeter had made a couple of bogeys in the middle of the round. Man, it was rough because Teeter was right there and made that birdie on, I think it was 16, and then fucking Hovland chipped in on. Did you see that chip in he had for Eagle?
Yeah, that was ridiculous, and it was really crazy because his short game's been so atrocious the whole week.
I know. Well, he made a triple bogey because he chunked two chip shots on the par three, like on 7 or 8 or something. But yeah, and then Teeter in the pouring ass rain on 17 throws a dart, drills
that
the putt.
Awesome.
Yes, it was to tie him up. And it's still pissing the rain going down 18. And Teeter hit a bad tee shot, but got back out in the middle of the fairway. Nobody was reaching that green in two anyways, went in the face in the rain. And then he said he pulled his tee shot, but he hit a pin high. He had a look. I don't know if that putt was uphill or downhill.
Just short, man.
Yeah, I mean, he just barely did not.
It seemed uphill, just by the way. It kind of slowed down, but who knows?
Yeah. It very well could have been, or just could have been the moisture in the greens, you know, at that point.
True.
That was a pretty wet part of the green whenever it was pouring the rain there. But most likely, I think you're probably right with the uphill version there. But I thought when Hovland hit that shot in the middle of the green that, you know, that was pretty much two-putt territory and let's get a playoff and, you know, hopefully, you know, get Teeter through. But fuck, dude, I mean, he hit the hole, thankfully. For him, mm-hmm. You know, that sucker was 10, 12 feet by if he didn't hit the hole. So, but yeah, I mean, good for Hovland. It's just, yeah, it's that, especially that you texted me about it today, that interview afterwards where Teeter was, you know, holding back some tears, man. I mean, that's, you know, you don't get those as a kind of a journeyman like he is. You just don't get those opportunities mm-hmm. that often. And he knows that. And so it was an emotional type of deal for him where he, you know, about broke down, but, you know, good on him on, you know, being a gentleman, a good golfer and, you know, giving credit where credit is due to Victor afterwards too, you know, saying, hey, you made a great putt, you know, beat me. So, yeah but I hated it for him and Lee. Dude. It was fun to watch Lee though. I don't know if you watched the end of that broadcast. He was on there quite a bit. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I saw, I watched as much as I could. I kind of recorded some because I was doing other things, and I knew Teeter was in it, so I kind of wanted to watch, you know, root him on later on, even if I knew the results, because if he won, I really wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see, you know, Lee out there and Teeter doing his thing, because it's not been the best, like, month or so, but he had a run there towards the end of last year. He was playing some good golf again. So, you know, golf's a streaky game. I know when we were texting about it, because I saw the video, because friend of the show, Kevin Price from the Korn Ferry Tour, tweeted about it, and he mentioned how good of a guy Teeter's been. He's on the tour for, like, from 16 to 18, and he was mentoring the young guys, so he knows a bunch of them. And the tweet was really good. I bet you he could have wrote an article on the darn thing about how good it is. But, like, 40 years old, you know, you hear stories, you know, you listen to No Laying Up, and you got Tim Herron and some of those guys that they know when they get into their 40s, they can't keep up with these young guys anymore. It's just it's a challenge for, you know, the best of the best can, but a lot of these guys, they're just waiting until 50 hits. It's tough to keep it going. And so to get that close, like you said, I think the only other runner-up he had was 2013 or 2014, a Tiger at the Riv, I believe it was, yeah, or at Torrey, one of the two. So it is pretty crazy. But I was texting you because it was good to hear that he's – I don't know how they did the math already, but I guess they're kind of guessing. Because if you're top 125, you automatically get your card for the next year. And he's only like 100 to 150 FedEx points, which is silly to talk about in frickin' February. But because of how, like, just that performance alone, just those top finishes almost get you your card for the following year if you can put one to two more good finishes together. So, like you said, it's going to be a heck of a grind to get there. But, man, if he just – a playoff or anything works differently – he gets that 2-year exemption, and it gets, yeah, it's a life changing deal. So
it was like a 500 way like him, yeah,
540 grand to the winner. So, like, it wasn't the big boys, but I guarantee you could ask Teeter, he could have given him $0. That 2-year exemption is all I care about. So, yeah, that sucks because it's someone that you know and that the kind of podcast has gotten to know through that kind of deal. But it'd be fun to talk to Lee sometime about it and just kind of what was it like going down the stretch there and knowing you're gonna have to grind with one of those dudes, but. Hey, maybe he can roll into a Honda this week. We'll see how it goes. We'll talk WGC now. For me, it was a very fun tournament to watch. The place is like – it's almost like Augusta Green. It's crazy how bright it is on TV. The coverage was amazing. NBC continues to crush the crap out of CBS. We actually got to watch golf shots from everybody on the course for the most part. But every day kind of had a different guy having their day, and it ended with Pat Reed taking it down. It's only fitting. I said it like – no duh, I should have played him. Once Pete Costas went off on No Laying Up, Pat Reed's going to come out and just go, you know, no, you guys are wrong, I'm good. That's what he does. That's what he does all the time. So what's your takes on WGC Mexico? Because there was a lot of different – each day almost had like a different, you know, high-impact player and whatnot.
Yeah, I wish I would have played more of him. I actually, you know, put him on a team just because, you know, of the whole No Laying Up pod there with Costas basically calling him a cheater, so it just seemed like it was going to happen. But more surprising to me is like the folding of JT on Sunday. Shot 73, really poor round for him. He could not find a fairway at all whatsoever, and he was hitting it so well going into that day. And then, you know, Rory just not being able to make enough birdies. Rahm, bit of a surprise. I mean, he was I think 18 under through like 30 holes or something on the weekend there, and then he just kind of ran out of gas, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that the golf course is a lot of fun to watch from just a fan perspective, and NBC does do and did do a much better job. I know they have quite a bit of commercials, but, I mean, even on the Thursday-Friday coverage, they showed – in those 2 days, they showed all 72 golfers in the field.
Mm-hmm.
CBS –
pretty sure CBS has never done that.
No, they would never do that. So, just from that perspective, you know, you got to see a lot more golf shots. And one thing that NBC does that I think is great is they show these guys. So, like, especially in this tournament, they, you know, they're going out in threesomes off of 1 and 10. So there's guys all around the golf course, and you know, there's some guys on the back nine, obviously, when the leaders are starting the front nine, who are out of it, not really contending, but they're still hitting golf shots. And so these guys are hitting shots into greens that eventually the leaders will hit into. And then they show a good shot where a guy hits it in the green, says, you know, this is what could happen here in just a few hours with, you know, with these guys. So it kind of sets you up pretty nicely to say, hey, you know, this guy could score on this, so it's not really over with yet. And kind of keeps you engaged that way. Even though, you know, I mean, obviously you're, especially in this tournament, there was really what, three or four guys going into Sunday who could really win. And, but you know, it was overall, it was great, man. I'm a fan of that tournament and that golf course. The other thing about it is it plays 7,500 yards. It's 7,500 yards, but it's actually 6,700 yards because mm-hmm. of the altitude. And these guys, you know, they tore it apart, but it wasn't anything like, you know, they weren't shooting 30 under on it, you know, because there's a more placement on that golf course. And mm-hmm. I bet if they made it firm and fast, it would be really difficult.
Yeah, the placement's very key there. Like, you saw how many guys got stuck in the trees and were punching out. So it wasn't like they could just go buck wild on it. They were trying on certain times. And then when they have to lay up, they still had like 220 yards into a par four, which, yeah, sure, it's like 170 or something. That's still not a gimme for anybody. Like, they're used to hitting wedges and stuff. So it was interesting to see how it goes because, you know, even though it's got the elevation change, the distance, they still have to, the ball still has to go 220 yards. So it's just a different club you're hitting it with, and it makes it, you still got to hit it right and all those kind of things. It's a different animal. It's kind of fun to watch how they all scramble. The Kukui definitely got to guys. I love it because I live in Kukui land. Like, I it's annoying as all hell. It's a terrible, terrible grass to try to have a short game out of. And I absolutely love when I see a professional chunk a chip and I'm like, hey, I did it like 2 hours ago, thank you. So yeah, I totally get it. It's fun to see take place, so it'll be cool to see where it all goes, because mainly the big boys up top. EVR was there doing his thing, but it was kind of who you expected to be up there. DJ disappeared, which was fun because the Slack chat was going back and forth on that all week. Dirework, Kevin, and some other guys were like, here's the reasons for him, here's the reasons against him, looking at Vegas numbers. It was really cool to see. And that's why we say come join us in the Slack chat. Once even before pricing came out today, they were all in there chatting it up. So they're all pumped for the Honda. It's crazy.
I've been blowing it up, man.
Yep. It's been fun. It's free. Come join. It's simple as that. Just DM me your email, put you on in there. That simple. But yep. Enough of the last week's recap. Not everybody loves all that good stuff. So let's get to the Honda. It's a fun event. It used to be a highly heralded event. Now with the scheduling, it's getting kind of weaker each go-round, and that's just the way the schedule is going to go. But why don't you give us some past event history for the Honda Classic?
Yeah, so it's been at PGA National Golf Club in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, since 2007. Last year, Keith Mitchell pretty much – well, I mean, if you didn't know Keith Mitchell, I think some newspaper called him Ken Mitchell, or do you remember what exactly name they used? They used some – random name wrong.
Yeah, it was bad.
That's how little known he was outside of our bubble. Keith Mitchell won 9 under par, one shot over Ricky Fowler and Brooks Koepka. 2018, Justin Thomas was the winner, 8 under par. He also injected somebody that year, didn't he? Didn't that the year that he kicked a dude out?
It was for telling his ball to get in the bunker. Yeah, wasn't that in the playoff?
Yeah, it was a playoff against Luke List that year. I don't know if it was in the playoff. I think it was like coming down 17 or 18. 2017, Ricky Fowler was a champion, 12 under, four shots over Morgan Hoffman and Gary Woodland. 2016, Adam Scott was your champion, 9 under par, one shot over Sergio. Other past winners, Rory's won this before, Rory Sabatini, Russell Henley's a past champion. He's playing this week. Padraig Harrington has actually won this tournament twice, once at this golf course, most recently 2015. I'm not even sure if he's in the field this week, but either way, it's a pretty tough golf course, and I'm sure you'll talk about all the different aspects of it, so I'll turn it over to you there.
And Patty Harrington is in the field. Yes, he's here this week. But you mentioned PGA National Champions Course, par 70, 7,125 yards, so a shorter golf course as we kind of expect on these ones. It's a very tight fairway golf course, heavy rough golf course, and water for days golf course. Water comes into play in about 15 of the holes, and you have the bear trap holes 15, 16, 17. Since 2007 is the third hardest three-hole stretch in golf. But don't be fooled, holes 5, 6, and 7 have been the fifth hardest stretch of three holes in golf also since 2007. So this is a very, very tough course. That's why when Jesse was talking about scores, it's par is a good score. Par is a very good score here. Don't be shy on that. Bunkers all over the place. You got to be strategic off the tee, not just to avoid water, but to avoid bunkers. Got to have a decent around the green game. I mentioned the narrow fairways. You don't want to be in the rough. Guys talk about it. They trimmed it down a little last year because they changed some of the greens and everything. They expanded them. And Brooks Koepka quoted out saying it made it a little easier. At the same time, I'm pretty sure they might grow it out this year. So keep an eye on that. Be something to watch. But Bermuda greens, you're going to hear that over and over because we're gone with POA. It's Bermuda season. That's one thing Killer Keith Mitchell does so well is Bermuda. So we'll see that. Greens are about 7,000 square feet, around 11.5 on the stem. Not too bad. They're not too fast because one thing about this course, it's about a mile or so from the Atlantic Ocean. So it's very, very windy at times. This week's weather, it's anywhere from like 10 to 15 on certain days up to like 20-something gusts on other days. If it gets 15 to 20 miles an hour, this course gets very, very tricky. You got to be very, very smart and just take what it gives you. You can't be too aggressive. A lot of the people that Jesse mentioned as past winners, you don't notice as bombers, even though Keith and JT recently did. The biggest thing is you want to be able to score on the par fives. If you can get to the par fives in two and pretty much lock in a birdie, that's going to be huge. If you think about it, you get 8 shots at par fives this week. If you can birdie, say, 6 of those, some of those winning scores Jesse mentioned were 6-7 under par. That is huge looking at the weekend. So par five scoring is going to be very, very big. Bogey avoidance as well. And I would say accuracy. Some guys won't. I just say stay the heck out of the water. But I know that's not a stat you can find on one of your databases. Jesse, what kind of key stats are you looking for this week?
Yeah, strokes gained, avoiding water. Yes. It's not out there yet. But, you know, I lean more bombers on this course. You know, if you look at that list of winners recently, you know, those guys all bomb it. So driving distance approach. I was looking at, like, last year, Keith Mitchell actually lost strokes putting 2 out of 4 days. So, you know, basically half and half. And then the rounds that he actually gained on was like 1 and 2 on those rounds. So it's not a huge deal. Obviously it can play a factor because it's golf. And if you get a hot putter, it doesn't matter, you know, kind of what's going on with the rest of your game. If you can make putts, then you'll gain shots. But long story short, not really worried about putting. You know, it's just one of those things that I won't wait at all. Strokes gained approach, greens regulation, that type of thing is going to be key. And then, yeah, just getting it off the tee. I think you can wait strokes gained par five if you'd like. It's just, you know, it's kind of whatever your preference is. But obviously this is Bermuda, so if you're looking at any putting stats, if that's something you do want to do as a tiebreaker or because you want to wait it, then that's the way you want to lean there. But yeah, that's it. That's it for me, pretty much. Just looking at a lot of course history, too, of course.
Yeah, there is a lot of course history here. We'll get into Fanshare Sports right now. Again, promo code ALWAYSPRESS, one word, 20% off the package of your choice. They've been great to us, and it's an amazing tool. I reference it at least once or twice before locking in all my lineups. I know Jesse uses it and others. There's so much cool stuff at Fanshare Sports, so go check it out. But course history is going to be huge here. We'll get to that in a minute. But coming in current form, because it's going to be one of those – you know, we're not going to have a bunch of guys that have made like all 10 cuts here and stuff. There's, I think, only 2 guys that have made at least 5 or 6, maybe 4 guys made 5 straight cuts here. There's got a lot of guys that have missed cuts. This is just a carnage. It takes 1 or 2 water balls and you're done. And it's just wild what can take place here. The guys coming in good current form. And again, they're coming off of POA for the most part, but keep that in mind. Last 6 events, Usti's averaging 83 DK points. Usti leads the field. Just let that one sink in for you. Gary Woodland, Shane Lowry, Matt Neesmith, our boy, coming in at almost 79 DK points at 4th. Matt McNeely, Ricky Fowler, Chase Seifert, Benny Ann, Brian Harman, and Harry Higgs, the legend, Harry Higgs. That's quite the group of 10 golfers right there. Just going to throw that out there. Tells you about this field in a nutshell. If we look at the last 6 events on Bermuda grass, this will get fun because this will get talked about a lot this week. I know a lot of people use this in their models like Jesse was talking about. But last 6 events on Bermuda, Usti leads the way again at over 92 DK points. You got Sungjae Im, Benny On, Ricky Fowler, Denny McCarthy, one of the best putters on tour, coming in at 5th. Justin Rose, Brooks Koepka, Rory Sabatini, Bud Cauley, and Johnny Vegas. So Usti coming in strong again. Couple more quick things for you now. Over the last 5 Honda Classics where you have DraftKings scoring, a lot of people haven't played them all, so a few guys, Ricky's played in all 5. He's averaging 69 points. That's good for 5th. That shows you how tough it is if you play here a lot. J.C. Poston's played twice. He's got 67. Benny On twice. Gary Woodland 4 times getting 65. It's going to be one of those weeks where like 300 points might be a strong DK week. Just keep that in mind. It's going to be a low, probably more than 300, but it's going to be a low scoring deal. So don't get too ambitious there. And then last but not least, we opened with course history. Like Jesse was talking about, if you go on the main Fangraphs deal, you can click on the course history button. You get green to green for course history and current form. Wyndham Clark checks that box. Ricky Fowler checks that box. Benny Ann, JT Poston, Louis Oosthuizen. And I think that those are the only five that are coming in good current form and good course history. So let that one sink in as well. It's going to be a wild weekend in Florida. Let's get to the DraftKings scoring, Jesse. 10K and above, we have four guys. Fleetwood 11-6, Brooks 11-2, Fowler 10-8, Gary Woodland 10-3. All can be in play. What are you looking at?
I mean, this is just like usual. You know, you're kind of picking your poison up top here. I will say this. There's a couple different angles to take here, I think. Most people, especially coming off of last week, Tommy Fleetwood, he did not have a great showing, right? I mean, he finished 18th, 70, 69, 70, 69. Pretty steady golf there. Before that, he was 11th, 2nd, 2nd, 1st. And this is, you know, on European Tour. So take that with a grain of salt. But I actually like him, especially from a ball striking standpoint. The guy, Tee to Green, has been one of the best players in the world. And that's really what it takes here, is just being able to, A, keep it in play, hit greens, and then make a few putts during the week. His lone appearance here was 2018. He finished 4th. So I like Tommy. And then not usually a Gary Woodland guy, but at 10,300 in this field, I think he's got some playability. Decent finish last week. He finished 12th. Sunday wasn't great. Had a really good Saturday. He did finish 2nd at this golf tournament back in 2017, and he has made 6 straight cuts at this golf course. Nothing great besides that 2nd. He did have a 6 back in 2011. But, you know, I feel like Gary can, you know, do well at this golf course too. Brooks, I'm fine if you play him. His course history is okay. It's nothing great. And then his finishes recently coming off that injury, you know, I mean, I don't know if he's still coming back or whatever. And then Ricky at 10-6, he's got really good course history. I expect him to be popular again. So, I mean, I usually go on the full fade of Ricky train when he's popular, and it, you know, just burn money that way. So my favorite play is Tommy by far, though, up top here. You know, will I use him? I don't know. But if I can make it work, and I think you can pretty easily with some of these 7K values, you know, that's who I would go to above 10K for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of value this week. So Tommy for me as well, because I think Tommy goes low-owned. It's just one of those deals. People, like our narrative now, why is the most expensive guy everyone? Why is everybody playing him? He can't close. I can see all these narratives coming out there. And, A, it's the field you're playing in because, you know, he finished, like you said, 4th here 2 years ago, 18th last week, 11th his event before that. He's playing really, really good golf overall. And, sure, okay, he hasn't closed on the PGA Tour. This is a place he can do it. Like you said, off the tee, from tee to green, one of the best in golf. If we're talking windy conditions, I like the way Tommy can play. He can keep it in play and take advantage of something like this. This course is like a Valspar-type field. Heck, it's so narrow. It's like a European golf course. It makes sense that he could play well here. So I like Tommy at 11-6, and he can definitely fit them with the values below. The other guy I'm liking is Gary Woodland. We're on the same page on this upper level. He's one of the few guys that has made almost every cut he's played here. He's made 4 straight years. He's made the cut here, including the 2nd 3 years ago. Coming in pretty good form. A guy that can go definitely less than driver out there with the 3-wood. And he likes his course quite a bit, listening to some, reading some of the quotes as we got ready for the podcast. So Woodland and Fleetwood for me, like you said, if you want to play Brooks, go for it. Fowler's going to be so popular. Like, you could have made Fowler 12,000, and I think everyone would play him. He's going to be very popular this week. So it's Fleetwood and Woodland for me as well. We're on the same page on that one. 9K range, you got Justin Rose down to 9,900, Usti 97, Hovland 95, Sungjae 93, Billy Ho at 92, Shane Lowry 91, and EVR at 9,000. I'm not kind of sold on half of this range, but what do you like here?
I'll start with Sungjae at 93. You know, he's a guy who's generally speaking pretty decently consistent tee to green. When he struggles, it's typically on the greens, and in a place, you know, kind of where everybody will be making some bigger numbers and not necessarily running away with it. I don't mind Sungjae. I think Billy Ho is very interesting at 9,200. So 16th here last year, miscut the year before that, 4th, 8th, and the 2 years before that, miscut 46th. So, I mean, he's like super boom or bust, and he really came on in Mexico last week. It was very quiet, 65 on Sunday, but ran up the leaderboard, finished 9th. He was 9th in Phoenix. At 9,200, I think he'll go kind of under the radar with some of these guys above him, potentially some of the guys below him. So I like Billy Ho quite a bit at 9,200. And then Shane Lowry at 91. He has made two cuts here. I don't really expect him to like contend for the win necessarily, but he seems like he can make the cut here, and he's played pretty well recently, 29th, 13th, and 11th in his last three starts. You know, obviously 29th last week in Mexico. So those are like my three main guys here. I think there's a couple of things. You know, you mentioned Louis and him gaining or having the highest average DK points over the last, what, three or six tournaments.
Yeah. And over six in Bermuda as well.
Here's the deal with the reason I'm not a huge Louis fan, and maybe this will probably bite me in the ass, is, I mean, he like was not good last week, tee to green. He ended up like gaining, I think, most of his strokes on the green, which is really odd. Let me pull up his exact stats from last week. Yeah, so minus four total, minus 13 tee to green, and plus nine on the greens, according to Fantasy Golf National.
It's not good.
I don't know. That just freaks me out quite a bit. And, you know, I mean, especially if – I don't know how popular he'll be, but it feels like, you know, he might be. So, and then Hovland coming off a win, no thank you. Justin Rose, I don't know where his head's at. EVR at 9,000. I just don't know if I can pay that much for him.
It's a price bump.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's coming off the third-place victory there. I feel like that will give him some added ownership, so I would rather go the other way. And so that's my thought process here in the 9K range.
Yeah, Usti's on my radar. I did not know all those. I knew he was bad last week, but those numbers are kind of terrifying. So, you know, if he comes in low-owned, I'll probably jump on him, but he might be a little popular in this range. Before last week, he had a few weeks off of him, played well 23rd, 5th, 2nd in his previous three Euro Tour events. He does love this course. I believe he lives close to the course, so that's one narrative. His bet will be there, which is always good. But Usti at 97 intrigues me. But other than that, we're on the same page. Sungjae at 93, I don't mind. But my two favorite plays here, Billy Ho at 92, the way he's ball striking it right now. The current form's outstanding. Recent course history, like you mentioned, very, very strong. I do like Billy Ho, and I really like Shane Lowry at 91. Two made cuts here. You mentioned 29th last week, 13th and 11th, previous two outings. No, not a world beater by any means, but another one, if you see the wind's going to start piping up, Lowry's got no problem playing in the winds. He's very, very good in those winds and those horses like that. So Lowry at 91, I think, could be a very, very nice play. A tournament like this where like 8-under can be the winner brings so much of the field into play. So you don't have to worry about just going birdie bananas here. Like, I like him because if he gets in trouble, he can make birdies to make up for it type thing. But Shane Lowry's also that guy that he knows par's a good score. And if he can shoot like 2-under every day, he knows he has a chance to have like one big day to go for it. So Lowry at 91, I'll definitely have some shares of this week. 8K range, we got your boy, Daniel Berger, up to 8,900. He's playing some good golf. Benny on 88, Neiman 87, JT Poston 86, Poulter 85, Palmer 83, Connors 82, Schwartzel 81, Grillo, and List Post at 8,000. Much more fun in this range. I can live with some of these guys. Who do you like?
Start at the top there with Berger, 8,900. Two straight made cuts here, 36th and 29th in the last 2 years. So that's good from that perspective. And then two straight top 10s on tour, fifth at AT&T and then ninth at in Phoenix. So pretty good form coming in, mixed in with some okay course history. And I see why his price is kind of 8,900. And then JT Poston at 86. He's made two straight cuts here. 2019, he finished 36th. 2017, he finished 27th. And then has three straight top 40s on tour. When I say top 40s, he hasn't finished anything better than 30th, but, you know, he's been inside the top 40. And then Ryan Palmer at 8,300. so here we go. The dude is hit. I think he's, I'm pretty sure Culp, Josh Culp tweeted out that he's like hit more,
16 hit more water balls.
Yeah. So he's super tilting on this golf course, but he finished fourth here last year. And has had some pretty good success this early season. Obviously was in contention at Sony before he hit one over, from, Wahoo to Maui. And then, Farmers, he finished 21st. He can play in the wind as well. If it's windy, Texas guy, not a big deal there. So 8,300, like him quite a bit. And then fucking Luke List at 8,000. I don't know, like, especially like, you know, if he gets the kind of Mayo bump, which I know Mayo's a fan of his or has been in the past, because the guy is really good tee to green. He just can't putt worth a shit. He's basically Kevin Mitchell or Keith Mitchell. Sorry, Keith Mitchell. I even called him the wrong damn name. But Luke List has made three straight cuts on tour, 30th, 25th, 36th in his last three. Missed a cut here last year, but second the year before that, 52nd, 10th. So, I mean, he's got some decent course history. And, you know, at 8,000, it's in this field, I can kind of see it. So, I mean, I'm okay with him. My two, you know, more favorite players in this region would be Palmer and Berger, but those are the four that I would really – I'm keying on.
Berger's on my list for sure. I like the way his game's improving. We've talked about it since he came back from injury. It's like wait and see, wait and see. He's playing pretty darn good golf right now. So I got no problem jumping back on the Berger train. Palmer GPP I can see because even when he hits all those water balls, like you said, he's made 2, 4, 6, 7 of the last 8 cuts here. So that's, you know, all things considered, you can make it work. I don't mind Luke List in the GPP. I wrote him down as well as a guy because, you know, missed cut, 2nd, 52nd, 10th the last 4 years here. So when he has his head out of his rear end, he can be quite productive. But the other guys I really like here, JT Poston, I'm a big fan of him. 36th, 27th, the 2 years here. You know, a couple 30th, 37th place finishes. I like him to make the cut here. I really do. And if he runs hot with the putter, he can make it work. So Poston, I like at 86. I love Ian Poulter this week. Didn't play here last year. Missed cut, and then 43rd, 43rd, 3rd, 36th. Coming in 17th and 16th in his last two Euro Tour events. He's getting ramped up. He likes the Florida swing. Got to get in the Ryder Cup mode. I like Poulter to he's a great cash game play with a little bit of upside at $8,500. So I am on the Ian Poulter train, but I usually always am. So no surprise there. And then Corey Connors. If we're talking about guys tee to green, Corey Connors is one of the best in golf. He's about, you know, Luke List might be able to bomb it. Corey Connors just gets it there. Neither one can putt. So Connors is 82. It's basically him and List are the intriguing options between the two. And if it's windy, I think it negates some of the bomb ability. But I think Connors at 82 could be an intriguing option as well. My top two plays would be Poston and Poulter. We'll recap that later. But I don't mind a little Berger action as well. 7,500 above, Jesse, who you liking?
Start with Harris English, 7,800. Three straight made cuts here, including a 12th. Last year, three straight made cuts on tour, 16th in Phoenix. Russell Knox at 7,600, kind of from a more of a course history perspective. You know, if you go all the way back to 2015, 2014, he finished top, you know, finished second and third in 2014, 2015, finished 51st here last year, but is coming off two straight made cuts. I mean, only GPP option there for Knox. Vaughn Taylor, again, another guy who kind of just from a course history perspective, he's made five out of seven. One, two, three. So, yeah, seven. Five out of seven. Or I'm sorry, six out of seven cuts in a row here. 59th, 59th the last 2 years. I mean, nothing great, but he did finish 13th at Genesis, where he had some good course history there, too. Wyndham Clark, I don't know if you remember last year at all, this tournament?
Very little. It doesn't really ring a big bell, but yeah, this was kind of his coming out party.
Well, the only reason I do is because I played Wyndham Clark, and I think I had Keimer, and I can't remember who else was on that team, but I was like third or fourth in the $44, you know, like 50K to first after Saturday, going into Sunday. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that at all?
Yes, yes, I remember this now because then you went so, tilt on Sunday, yes.
Yeah, because Wyndham Clark like was the only guy like over par on the day and backed it up and ended up finishing like 2,000th or something, which is
he finished seventh here last year.
Yeah, he finished seventh, but he was leading after Saturday. Yeah. Gotcha. So going into Sunday, he was in the final group. He was leading. He actually came out, birdied the first hole, and then I think he made a couple pars and made another birdie, and then just shit the bed. So I think he's intriguing from that perspective. I mean, you know, last year coming into this tournament, he played over in Puerto Rico when he finished 10th. This year he's coming from Genesis and he finished 17th and 18th at AT&T. So he's coming off of POA instead of, you know, playing over in PR. So, you know, will stuff translate as well for him? I don't know, but I think he's interesting from that perspective. And then your boy, Mav McNeely, man, 7,500. Mm-hmm. He has played really, really well recently. I mean, so Mav McNeely, yep, he and then he finished, you know, 27th, 5th, and then 15th in his last three starts. So I know you've talked about him several times this year already, and I guess it's time for me to hop on. So you might want to hop off, just full disclosure on that.
I'm glad you finally joined the McNeely train. I'm curious to see first time here how he plays. I know he went to Stanford and played in the Pac-12. That's a big POA conference. But his game's playing really well. He's playing some really good golf. So I don't mind Mav. Johnny Vegas is an intriguing GPP play for me here. He's made three straight cuts here, 16th, 72nd, and 4th. A missed cut in the 12th. Coming off a 9th at Puerto Rico, he went 10 under on, was it Sunday or Saturday? One of the two. Very streaky guy, GPP probably only, but has that upside, you know, 16th and 4th in two of the last 3 years here. Not too bad for $7,900. I love Harris English. I think he's a really solid cash game play. 12th here last year. I'll be rolling him out. Another guy that I think might go overlooked in this range, and I'm a big fan. He hasn't played here in 4 years. But prior to that, 25th, 46th, 9th, 4th, 29th, 9th. Come off of 22nd in Mexico is Lee Westwood at 78. Another guy that, you know, doesn't have to be a bomber's course. If it gets windy, Westwood at 78 can get quite interesting at a low ownership in this spot. Clark's GPP viable, like you said. I like McNeely. The last guy I wanted to mention finished 30th here last year, 29th the year before, coming off a 14th last week in Puerto Rico, a 47th and a 50 prior to that. Adam Schenck at 75. That's one of your boys. You took McNeely. I'll take some Schenck. See how I like that. But I think he's an interesting $7,500 as well. You mentioned a lot of 7K guys that are in play this week. Who do you like 7,400 to 7,000?
Yeah, I mean, it starts getting, I think, really good down in the bottom of the 7K range. Harry Higgs, 7,300, never played here, but talked about him plenty enough this year. Three straight top 25s, including you know, an 18th at Pebble and then a 9th at the Farmers Insurance Open. Kyle Stanley, man, at 7,200, coming off a pretty good showing in Puerto Rico. He finished 3rd. He did make the cut at Genesis. Before that, he had 4 straight missed cuts. His course history here is very mixed, but he has a very, very good tee to green game. And if he gets it going, you know, I think he can hang at this golf course. It's just a matter of, you know, can he keep it in play? Matthew Neesmith at 7,200. You know, I think we both were on the one and done train with him last week, weren't we? You had
yes,
him too.
Yes, we were. There we go. Heck of a run he had for us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, finished 6th. You know, he played very well on the weekend, 66, 67 to pop into the top 10 there, almost top 5. Like him a lot at 7,200. Taylor Gooch at 7,200. He finished 20th here last year and is coming off a 10th place finish in Genesis, 61st at the Phoenix Open. Has not missed a cut since Greenbrier back in September. So a bunch of cuts in a row for him on tour for Taylor Gooch there. Sam Burns at 7,100. He, you know, he missed the cut here last year, but he was 8th the year before that. I think that was that the year he played with Tiger?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. He was paired with Tiger. I think he beat Tiger in that round, if I remember correctly. He's coming off a 23rd at Genesis. Missed cut, Phoenix. 49th, 6th, the two starts before that. So, you know, 3 out of 4 made cuts, including a 6th, you know, at the American Express. So he could bode well here again. And then Sean O'Hare, man. I mean, I don't really know what to do with this guy. He did make the cut at Pebble Beach. He played a Corn Ferry event. He finished 4th in that Corn Ferry event back in January. So basically a month, 5-6 weeks ago. He finished ninth at that event. Missed cut here in 2018, but 11th and 14th and 25th in the 3 years before that. So his course history is it's intriguing. I'm not super sold on Sean O'Hare, but I think he's an interesting, like, if you're a 150 man lineup or 150 lineup type guy, you know, I probably have five or six with Sean O'Hare in there just in case. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah, this low 7K range, even 6K, is like a multi-entering guy's dream. Like, like you could really mix and match this range and wouldn't be shocked if guy get it done here. But for me, this guy, Kevin turned me on to him in the chat today. I looked some more. Coming off a 17th 2 weeks ago, and, you know, he's made six of seven cuts here, 20th, 24th, 43rd, missed cut in 2016, 44th, won the damn thing in 2014, and a 13, that's Russell Henley. If you believe in course history, this guy's got it at $7,400. I know Kevin's a big fan of him. Going into the week, Bud Cauley, 12th, withdraw, 27th the last 3 years here, so probably an injury got him to withdraw, but played pretty well the other 2 years. Made back-to-back cuts. He's always an interesting guy when it comes to tee to green game at 73. Another guy that I seem to gravitate towards a lot, and he's got mixed results here. Missed cut, 33rd, 48th. Missed cut, 11th, 58th. Missed cut, 12th. So it's a made cut, missed cut, made cut, made cut, missed cut. So we're good this year. $7,300 for Brian Harman. I like a guy that can proke and prod around courses like this. Harman at 73. Will be on my list. I like the Neesmith call, of course. We've been on to him. Lucas Glover, 4th, 17th, 21st the last 3 years here, including a 4th in 2013. Three straight made cuts on tour. He's a good course history guy at 72. I like Gooch. Like you said, I like Burns is an option. And then if you're going deep diving, a guy I've been on a lot lately, 36th here last year, he's made four of the last six cuts, Cameron Tringali. He's a guy that's in plays, made two straight cuts on tour as well. He's 7,100. I told you I like a lot of guys. If you want a GPP at KH Lee, finished 7th here last year, 14th and 13th his last two trips on tour. I think he's a good GPP play at 7K if you want to go kind of stars and scrubsy. And then the other guy, I think he'll probably be popular because he usually is in this range. Didn't play here last year, missed cut in 14, but coming off, you know, 14th, he's made four straight cuts. People might like him. I'd rather go KH Lee, but Zhang will be very popular at 7,000. He's been very chalky as the cheap guys of late, but I think KH Lee is a good pivot off of him at 7,000. That's why I wanted to mention his name. But yeah, lots to like down here. I wasn't kidding when I said 7K and below, but the 7K range, I mentioned a lot of names. You could almost split it up in guys like for cash and guys like for GPP, and it makes a lot more sense in that regard. All right, Jesse, 6K range has some more fun guys. Who you liking?
Yeah, there was actually a question. I think Direwoke mentioned him in the Slack chat today. Tom Hoagie, 6,900. Course history is not good. Missed cut 37th. So that's kind of sketch, but he's played really well recently. So at 6,900, I'd be willing to take a shot with him for sure. And some GPPs. You mentioned Chase Seifert earlier in one of the fan share deals. I do like him. And then there's Joseph. Some people are calling him Bram Wagon. Some people are calling him Bram Goat.
I love this guy.
A lot of different nicknames.
Like three straight weeks, dude. It's been so Joseph. Good.
He's playing well, man. He's playing really well. I was surprised to see him at 6,700. I kind of equate him with a, like, similar to Matthew Neesmith type of guy who's who I feel like's got the upside to get there. It's just a matter of time before he does. So those two guys there, and then. You know, I mean, there's plenty of other names I could mention in this range probably, but that's pretty much it for me. Those three for now anyways.
Yeah, Hoagie's interesting. I like Bramlett. I played him 2 weeks ago at 6,200, and he finished 51st. Like, when you're paying that price, just make the cut, buddy. It's all I care about. Right. He's made four straight cuts, including a ninth at Puerto Rico. So he's been on the team for 3 weeks now. I guess I'll keep riding that train if I need to. You didn't mention him, but I'm just curious your thoughts. The Stugoat 6,700, and he's made a lot of cuts here. He missed it last year, I believe it was the 75th, but 46, 27, 26, 31st, 58th, 41st, 36th. A little different golfer now, but talking about course history, thoughts on Stugoat?
Yeah, I mean, he's just not been hitting it that great. I mean, typically I would be, and I'm sure last year I was all over him as far as you know, playing him, but I don't know. I'm not really feeling it. He's just not on the stats. He's not been playing well. He's been putting better than he's been hitting it. And that scares me.
A couple other guys, Brian Stewart's a good GPP play down here. 20th here last year, missed cut 27th. For me, he's too cheap for down here. He should be a low 7K guy. He's got like a top 25 upside for sure. Basically, the four cuts he's made here are no worse than 29th. And he's $6,700. Don't mind him at all. An interesting one, because those that look at course history might get turned off. But Tim Wilkinson, you know, 20th last week, 25th his previous outing. But he hasn't played here in 2 years. Didn't withdraw. Didn't play in 16. 51st, 55th. Didn't play for 3 years. Withdrawed in 2010, 64th, 30th. So either withdraws or makes the cut. He's $6,600, and he's been playing really good golf of late. That was my biggest point. Like I said, 20th, 25th, missed cut, 21st, 32nd at $6,600. I don't hate him at all. And then one that surprised me when I looked at course history is Scott Brown, 20th, 46th, 57th, 10th the last 4 years. Coming off a 67th in Puerto Rico and a second the previous week, he's $6,500. There's a lot more guys down here, like you said, but those ones at least check some boxes for me. All right, quick recap. Jesse, top play 10K in both.
I'll just go Tommy.
Yeah, I'm going Tommy with you too. We're going to share that one. 9K range, give me one.
Billy Ho.
I'm going to go Shane Lowry. 8K range, let's go two.
Poston and Palmer. Well, no. Berger and Palmer.
I'll go Poston and Poulter. 7,500 above, go two.
Wyndham Clark and Maverick McNealy.
I'll go English and Westwood. 7,400 to 7,000, go two.
Higgs and Neesmith.
Yeah, Neesmith's a good play. I like that a lot. For me, I will go with, there's a lot I like down here. I'll go Henley and I'll go Neesmith as well. Those two is where I'll go. 6K range, give me one.
I'll go with Hoagie.
You go Hoagie. I will go Bramlett. Oh, no, I'm going to go Stewart. Stewart will be my guy down below.
Stewart Sink?
No, Brian Stewart.
Oh, gotcha. Stewart. I'm with
Stewart,
you.
Sorry. Stewart. No problem. Yes. No problem. Not the Stew Goat. if you're starting a GPP lineup, give me three guys you'd start it with.
Three guys with a GPP lineup here. I'd probably go Higgs, McNealy, and then like somebody like Woodland.
I like this one. I go Fleetwood, Lowry, and List, and then take some punts. See what happens there. Cash lineup, give me three guys. Cash has been good this year.
Yeah, it has for you. so definitely listen more to Bubba on this than myself. But I think Lowry's more of a cash play for me. And then Neesmith and it'd be really difficult to like. I would probably lean more Berger than I would List for sure. I know the price is up there, $900 more, but I'd rather have Berger over List.
One thing I'll say for cash this week, I was toying with lineups. Don't feel bad about leaving money on the table for any lineup because this is a wacky week, but especially in cash. If you just want to go balanced, leave cash out there. Don't worry about it. But for me, my three-pack would be Poulter, Westwood, Poston. That's my first three. I have no problem with that at all. And now it gets fun. Picks to win, Jesse. This is a weird week. The last few weeks I've been pretty comfortable with my like one and done picks and stuff. This is a different kind of week. What are you feeling so far?
Yeah, I feel like it's a week to kind of to punt it off. I wouldn't burn for me. I wouldn't burn anybody in the 10K range as far as your. I've already played Ricky, but your Ricky or Brooks or Woodland or Tommy or even Justin Rose. So I would be looking more like Billy Ho, potentially.
He is 28-1.
Not yeah, bad. And then if you're looking for more of a long shot, I don't know, man. I'm just feeling some Neesmith.
Yeah, he's quite the long shot. He is 80-1. Don't mind that at all. But this is a week I heard on the Mayo show. It's either like one of the favorites wins or like guys like 150 and below. So
yeah.
You never know. I don't mind Shane Lowry at 40-1 and Poulter at 55. I think they got some upside to him. Could be a fun week to do some top 20 stuff with a bunch of these guys. Yeah, pick some of those poisons, see how it all lands out. But any final thoughts, any strategy for the people this week? Because it's going to be a roll. Like It's going to be a full tilt on Twitter. We haven't had a good full tilt in a while. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be tilt worthy. You know, last year the cut was 3 over. The year before that it was 6 over par. The year before that it was 1 over par. So it's probably going to be over par. So, you know, just don't fully tilt out when your guy starts, you know, 1 or 2 over. He's not necessarily done. But yeah, it's a kind of a week two to scale back a bit, just because it is a bit of a sketch week. And then next week, I believe, is the Arnold Palmer.
I think it's API, yeah. That'll be a good field.
That's always a fun one, yeah. And then a couple weeks till the Players Championship. Did you see DraftKings posted the million maker for the?
Yep, they're treating like the fifth major. It's happening.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So there's a lot of good golf coming up. This tournament's fun in that there is some carnage, and it's a tougher track, so it's not just a straight up birdie fest. And so those are funner golf tournaments for me to watch than you know, you're just everybody making birdies. And
I like watching
golfers who don't make birdies.
Agreed. I like watching guys that actually have to like think to play instead of just going out there and just throwing darts all over the place.
Right.
You know, maybe you have to make a tough shot that we have to make because we stink type stuff.
Yep.
So I enjoy watching that. I don't like watching like U.S. Opens where the winner was like 8 over par. But I also like to make, you know, when par is a good score, it's always fun. So like what you said about scaling it back, I feel like it's either scale it back or go super cheap tournament like 150 max and just let it rip. Like one of the two. Like just go full crazy on your – like do what Dire Work does. Or take it easy like I do, like 3 max entry. That's about it. So don't go. I don't like it. There's no in between, no gray area on this one. But it'll be fun. And if you have any questions, hit us in the Slack chat. It's a good time. Check out Ruby's Rubies. Ruby had a big week this past week. And then a lot of other guys in the chat have been blowing it up in NASCAR and in golf. Baseball's around the corner, so you don't want to miss the Slack chat. It is free. So come check that out. The podcast is on Twitter at AlwaysPressDFS. Jesse's at DFS Golf Gods, and I am at BDentric. This is your 2020 Honda Classic preview. Catch you later.